You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. Nice to have you back here up north at 8:06 on a Tuesday morning, October 28th. Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom is standing by, and Ruth Conniff from the Wisconsin Examiner will be joining us in our next half hour. Along the way, feel free to join us at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, or use that Civic Media app to call us, to text us, to leave us a voice note, or just come say hello or ask a question in the comment sections of Facebook or YouTube, where you can watch the show. That would be the Up North News Facebook and YouTube pages, or the Civic Media Facebook and YouTube pages, and let us know your thoughts about what's going on. That includes in the nation's capital, where you can always learn more through Cam Stevenson's Below the Beltway newsletter. Sign up at beltway.news or through couriernewsroom.com for dispatches from Capitol Hill. His latest notes that an elections lawsuit could lead to the Epstein files being made public or kept hidden, and the case was just handed to a Trump-appointed judge. One of many things we will be asking Cam about as he joins us now from Washington, D.C. Cam Stevenson, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Pat, good morning. I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. I see the temporary housing is coming along nicely. There's now a plant.
Our plants are doing well. The furnishings that came with it are really bringing the place together. Trying to find some more green to add to the
yes scene. Well, you see, it's flourishing, unlike, you know, say the east wing of the White House. Have you wandered out to see the wrecking crew in action?
As best as I could. It's a very interesting, I guess, at best, and depressing at worst scene over there. In the sense that normally around the White House, it's a very public space. People can walk around, and there's green areas and park benches and, you know, statues and all these sort of things you can walk by and kind of walk through living history. But that's not really how it's set up anymore. Once the Trump administration somehow realized after the fact how bad it looked that they were taking bulldozers to the section of the White House, they not only blocked off that part visibly, you know, with high covered fences so you couldn't see, they also started to block off the surrounding walkways, some of the little park areas and places where people used to just kind of sit and have their lunch. And so I was able to find a few spots to get a vantage point where I could see what was going on. Not much anymore. It's just a pile of rubble. The White House, they found a loophole that said that they didn't need any permits to tear things down, but they do need permits and, you know, zoning permissions to put things up. And so now it is just down for the foreseeable future.
Of course it is. Of course the loophole didn't work the way they fully intended. And regardless, you know, as things are needing to be demolished and then needing to be rebuilt, these things cost money. It just seems an interesting way to allocate resources when we're not allocating resources to things like healthcare, you know, feeding families, things like that. You've been looking at the numbers.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think on the one hand, it's very hypocritical for the administration to say that the ballroom is being paid for by donations. And so that's, you know, that's a non-issue. But then we're also taking donations to fund our military during the shutdown. I think that's just an odd dichotomy, but we can't take donations for SNAP benefits so kids can eat at school, or so that the million plus federal workers working for without pay right now could actually get a paycheck. I found through I was investigating how these donations were going to the ballroom, and found that even though they are donations from outside private organizations, we as taxpayers are still paying for that because they're going through a 501c3 nonprofit. The I believe it's called the Foundation of the National Mall Trust.
Okay.
But it's the Trust of the National Mall. It's a nonprofit, which means the millions of dollars people are donating, they'll get it as a tax write-off next year. And so, and we're the ones who pay for those.
So they make the donation, they get the tax write-off, we still end up paying the bill for this.
Yes. And for all we know, there's not really going to be a ballroom. There's no actual plans. There's only these moldings that the president likes to show off. There's no blueprints. There's no schematics. And this would take a lot of planning because there are also tunnels underground, safety tunnels, security measures, bunker facilities. You can't just slap a few pieces of plywood on it and call it a ballroom.
I recall, showing my age now, but once upon a time, there was going to be a new U.S. embassy in Moscow, and they finally had to tear the building down because they realized that throughout the construction, it was being riddled with listening devices and other literal spyware. And I am just suspicious enough of Trump's ties to Putin and the secrecy involved that whoever the next president is, and we all keep praying there will be a next president, that thing is going to need some serious review once Trump is out of office to make sure that, first off, the place is going to need a good decontamination, but that includes for, any electronic surveillance and things like that. Not necessarily to benefit, Russia, but to benefit, Trump personally, corporate donations, corporate donors, things like that. The whole thing just stinks to high heaven. And it is all, and yet, despite all of those concerns, it remains a distraction from things that should have more significance, not just reopening the federal government, but things like the Epstein files. And that leads us to an article that you have at Beltway.news about how a lawsuit about elections could lead to the Epstein files being made public or kept hidden. And an interesting choice of which judge got the case here, Cam.
Yeah, of all the judges in D.C., we get the Federalist Society one. But this is the case with Representative-elect Adelita Grijalva. She was elected to be in Congress over a month ago. Speaker Mike Johnson has refused to swear her in and seat her. He's made up a bunch of different reasons and excuses. The main thing is that there's no reason for her not to be sworn in. And one of the reasons people are speculating, and the longer it goes, the more likely it looks like, is that she would be the final vote to force the release of the Epstein files to the public.
And the speaker, to put it charitably, is wrong, or to be less charitable, making stuff up in terms of reasons not to swear her in, reasons why they can't use supplemental USDA funds to pay for SNAP benefits, and a host of other things. If there is a poster child for Congress essentially abdicating its responsibilities, it's whatever comes out of Speaker Mike Johnson's mouth.
And that seems like that's exactly what he's doing, is essentially not working for the people, but just finding ways to strengthen the executive branch, specifically under Trump. Even like what you said, the refusal to pay for SNAP benefits or finding some way to fund certain programs, while praising the Trump administration for using private donors to fund other parts of the federal government. That's a type of corporatism that we saw under Mussolini, where they use corporations to fund certain things that benefited this nationalist ideal of what a government should be.
Oh, and in Hungary in this day and era, again, part of Viktor Orban's rise to power hasn't been direct government takeover of things like media and other groups and institutions, but through, again, very wealthy friends who then, quote unquote, donate those facilities, for the government to use. Well, as long as the government is in the hands of their buddy, their pal. And, again, we should not be normalizing that here. So the elections lawsuit is there. It's a Trump-appointed judge who's going to look at it. Court date coming up in a couple of days yet this week, right?
Yep. It's the first appointment set for it is on the 30th. I've reached out. The lawsuit is by Adelita Grijalva and then the state of Arizona through their Attorney General, Chris Mayes. I reached out to Attorney General Mayes' office, and they will be here on the 30th. And so I'm coordinating to see if I'm... I probably won't be allowed in the courtroom. They usually don't allow press in for these meetings, but I'll definitely be outside, and we'll be giving updates as to what happens next.
All right. So you can get updates on that at beltway.news for the Below the Beltway newsletter. In Wisconsin yesterday, we had an interesting release by Governor Tony Evers and the Wisconsin Office of the Commissioner of Insurance giving specific numbers on just how high health insurance premiums are going to go starting Saturday, the date when open enrollment begins for health insurance policies under the Affordable Care Act in the marketplace. I don't want to reduce all of this to messaging, you know, Democratic messaging versus Republican messaging. The fact of the matter is that message coming from Democrats like Governor Evers is based in real numbers that says this is going to be the real impact of this government shutdown and Republicans protecting corporate insurance profits rather than trying to make healthcare more affordable. What's your assessment of whether that kind of messaging is happening from Democrats in D.C., or are they more stuck in process, or are they basically, are they silent? What is it that's happening in terms of communicating the shutdown in D.C. this week?
Yeah, so mainly what Democrats are doing is they've been traveling back and forth between D.C. To try and pressure Republicans to come back, and then also traveling back to their home districts to let people know what's going on. And their messaging throughout the shutdown, I feel like, has been fairly consistent. But it's one of those things where it almost requires a slow burn because, you know, they can say that premiums are going to go up. And there's a certain segment of the population that's going to believe them and a certain segment of the population that isn't. And then another bigger segment that doesn't hear them at all because they don't listen. You know, they don't want to hear from politicians. But the one thing everyone will hear from is their insurance company. You know, it doesn't matter what the message is. When I get my paycheck and there's 300 fewer dollars in it because my healthcare premiums have gone up, that speaks louder than anything anyone, you know, Speaker Johnson can say at a podium or what, you know, a member of Congress can say in a town hall.
No, it's extremely true. And much like the last shutdown came to an end in 2019, only after you know, there were enough air traffic controllers who didn't come in and the flight delays began piling up, and we're hearing the rumblings of that happening now. And I'm not saying it's going to be air travel again. It may just be the health insurance premiums, but you're right, Cam. It's that slow burn of real life impact. And then people either calling their congressman's office or, you know, showing up at meetings and saying, you know, that's enough of this. And Republicans still think enough of that pressure is going to be on Democrats to be the ones to cave. And from my standpoint here in Wisconsin, I'm not seeing any signs of that yet. I mean, Democrats definitely feel like they're on the, you know, they've got the moral high ground in this.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest problems is again, these information bubbles that we all live in, you know, Democrats and Republicans, but we're seeing it, especially that Republicans under this current administration are intensely online. They'd rather post memes and make fun of people on social media rather than meet with constituents. That's something that it takes something more drastic to break through. And I think people running out of food, it could do that. And I think people not being able to travel during the holidays, and coupled with the fact that the National Guard won't even get to go home for the holidays because they're stuck.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen bread riots in the past. I think we might be looking at some turkey riots.
Could be. Watch for that. Cam Stevenson, go to beltway.news for more. Thank you, Cam. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. And we will have Ruth Conner from the Wisconsin Examiner coming up in just a bit. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Some health information news you can use from Wisconsin pediatrician Dr. Kelly Snooks in her video series, Raising Wisconsin. Look for that over at the Up North News social media feeds on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And again, 855-75-CIVIC if you'd like to reach the show, especially between now and the bottom of the hour. And then after that, we will welcome in Ruth Khanna from the Wisconsin Examiner, 855-752-4842, or send us a text or a voice note using the Civic Media app. With the upcoming cut of SNAP nutritional benefits to all kinds of families, working families, families of people with disabilities, the elderly, and all of that, there's been a lot of talk that food banks are going to get busier. But here's the thing. They can't keep up with that many more people who are suddenly in need of enough food to put on the table. Food banks fill a role, but they were never meant to be a substitute for an entire national program. Now we've learned that job is even tougher for food banks because the Trump administration, starting back in May, as we're just learning now from ProPublica, the Trump administration abruptly cut $500 million in food delivery for food banks and other organizations across the country. It was all part of something called the Emergency Food Assistance Program. It was a way that surplus material from farms could be used for food banks. But between May and September across the 50 states, more than 4,000 deliveries of food have been canceled. All told, 94 million pounds of food or more is probably going to waste rather than being delivered to these food pantries. Now, it was already outrageous enough when the Trump administration abruptly cut funding to USAID. And once again, food was left to go to waste rather than going to starving children. And I know some people don't like to hear this, and other people do understand it, but they still don't like to have to think about the fact that Donald Trump's decision to do that literally meant children have been starving to death. Children have died in other impoverished countries because Donald Trump made a decision to stop sending food aid to those impoverished countries. The United States, if we've prided ourselves on anything above things like democracy, is also that we could literally feed the world. And yet we have stopped doing that. We have stopped helping the most troubled families in some of the most troubled places. And now, as it turns out, we're doing that here at home too. We first saw signs of it when the Trump administration cut funding to a program that helped deliver locally grown food to food banks, but also to school cafeterias. School lunches were healthier when they were benefiting from these kinds of programs where local producers, local farmers could share some of the fruits of their labor with schools and with food banks. And that was cut out. And now we come to find out that this emergency program for getting food to food banks and pantries has also been ended. $500 million worth. Now, $500 million cut from the budget, again, at first blush, maybe sounds like a lot. And people say, oh, well, yeah, I mean, our national debt is so high, we probably shouldn't spend $500 million on emergency food aid to pantries. If you think that, that's fine. That's your prerogative. But please understand, we didn't save $500 million. We didn't save any of that $500 million. It all went to pay for tax cuts for corporations and the very, very wealthy. And that's a fact. And you can la, 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 la all you want, but that's where it went. Because not only have all of these cuts to domestic food programs, to international food programs, to healthcare, not only has every penny of that gone to tax breaks for corporations and the very well off. In fact, the tax breaks were so generous that they're also adding to the national debt. That's literal deficit spending. So it's not just the money we're not spending on the middle class and on struggling families, but it's all of that money plus more that we're borrowing to make sure that corporations and the very wealthy pay less in taxes. And the same goes for the other topic that we've been bringing up today, and that would be the higher health insurance costs that will be coming as a result of the enhanced premium tax credits. And again, what we're hearing from some Republicans is, oh, well, that was all money that was going to free health care for illegals. First off, no, stop. You're embarrassing yourself. It wasn't. Okay. The only health care that any undocumented immigrants were getting was emergency health care because they weren't going to doctor appointments. They didn't want to risk deportation. But when they're bleeding, they're going to show up in the emergency room, and emergency rooms are going to treat them. That's the law anyway, but it's also simple human compassion. That's the healthcare the so-called illegals are getting. And in terms of SNAP benefits, no, they don't qualify. And again, they're not applying for things that would lead for them to be deported. So stop believing the garbage coming from politicians who are making these claims about immigrants, because they know that some people will believe it. Whereas if they were honest with you, they'd say, yeah, we're cutting these things to pay for tax cuts for some of our biggest donors. Now, we know you won't like that, so we're going to make up something about undocumented migrants being able to get this food aid. It's not the case. And so now we know that food banks won't be ready come this weekend, and we also know that health insurance bills are going to go up drastically starting this weekend with the beginning of the open enrollment period. And it's not going to get fixed till more Republican members of Congress hear from constituents who really start to feel that pain. Ruth Conniff from the Wisconsin Examiner next. You're up north. Matt and Aaron here is coming up next here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Jane and Greg will welcome in Todd Alba at 9:35. And then just after 10 a.m., Corrine Hendrickson, candidate for state Senate and a member of Main Street Alliance, will be joining them again just after 10 o'clock this morning for Matt and Aaron on Air. Later on the Maggie Dawn Show at 4 o'clock, Angela Lang, the executive director at Block, will be part of the program. Again, head to civicmedia.us to learn more. Ruth Conniff joins us now from the Wisconsin Examiner, and we'll be talking about a few different things the Examiner is following, including her latest column, Wisconsin School Children Become a 2026 Campaign Issue in the Worst Possible Way. We'll get to that and some of the other stories we're following with Ruth now. Ruth Conniff, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Very well, thanks.
It's good to have you here, and we'll come to the article in just a bit, but first I wanted to mention that the Examiner, like everybody else, is covering the story today about the basically monster hike in health insurance premiums that's coming, and it was a case of Governor Evers, along with the Office of the Commissioner of Insurance, putting out specific numbers yesterday, which really takes it, Ruth, beyond, you know, some kind of a ethereal, you know, thing about, well, the things might happen. These are the things that are actually going to happen to these kinds of households in these kinds of counties. It was a very specific illustration of the pain that lies ahead.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. My deputy Eric Gunn covered that yesterday. He went down to Milwaukee and saw the press conference that Evers held down there, and is reporting all the numbers from the Wisconsin Commissioner of Insurance this morning on our website at wisconsinexaminer.com. And it's really pretty frightening to look at the kinds of health insurance hikes that people are facing. And as Tammy Baldwin said yesterday, many people are simply going to have to drop their insurance because they don't have the money to cover these kinds of expansions. It's very uneven across the state.
Yes.
You know, there's, you know, some people are looking at just a 10% hike, but that is the minority of residents of the state of Wisconsin, because, you know, overall 39% in Waukesha County, up to as high as 800% for a 60-year-old couple in Barron County. So it's very, very significant.
It is. And I urge people to look at the articles and more to find out. Just to give that one example in dollars and cents, in Barron County, if you're a 60-year-old, you're a couple making $85,000 a year, you're still 5 years away from Medicare, Social Security, you know, full benefits, or 7 years away, I think, at that age. You're currently paying $340 a month for a silver level plan. Starting Saturday, instead of $340, it'll be $3,103. That's $33,000 a year that you would have to have lying around, or decide to go without health insurance. And that's where, again, many people are going to go. And Ruth, you and I have been doing this long enough. We remember the news stories pre-Affordable Care Act of people going without health insurance and the, you know, the financial and life tragedies that befell people.
Yeah, it's been such a significant improvement in quality of life for health insurance to be more accessible to millions and millions of people across this country. And, you know, the big issue right now that is holding up the end of the government shutdown is that Democrats are insisting that Congress fix the sunset of Affordable Care Act insurance subsidies, which is about to hit. So, you know, since 2021, people have been able to afford their insurance better because of this, you know, this boost from the government covering healthcare, the insurance premiums that people are otherwise paying. And that's about to go away. And so, you know, there's just this political war on about who's to blame for the government shutdown. Is it Republicans who control every branch of government, or is it Democrats who don't want to pass a resolution to reopen the government without fixing this problem? And this is the problem now, what we're looking at today, this announcement in Wisconsin of these massive skyrocketing premiums for people who are getting getting their health care through the Affordable Care Act marketplace. So, you know, I think that's the thing that people kind of need to focus on, not so much the who's to blame battle that's going on in Washington, but the actual dollars and cents problem that people across Wisconsin are going to face starting Saturday when they can no longer afford health care.
We're talking to Ruth Conniff, editor-in-chief at the Wisconsin Examiner, and I can't ever have a conversation with Ruth without talking a bit about migrant farm labor in Wisconsin. And her book, Milked, is required reading to understand the immigration crisis in this nation from a Wisconsin and dairy industry standpoint. You did have an article or a column earlier this month about tariffs and the immigration crackdown taking a toll on Wisconsin farmers and, of course, their farm laborers. So how would you best describe from an overview where we are, you know, three coming up on 4 weeks into this shutdown from the standpoint of Wisconsin farms and specifically Wisconsin's dairy industry?
Well, the shutdown is really bad for farmers. And one of the things that it's delaying is Trump's promised subsidies for farms that are supposed to make up for the impact of tariffs. I mean, farmers in Wisconsin and across the country are paying really high prices for fertilizer, for farm equipment because of the trade wars that Trump started with his tariffs. And then on top of that, China in May stopped buying all soybeans from the United States. Well, China is the biggest soybean customer in Wisconsin, and that's a major crop in our state. So farmers are unsure whether they will be able to sell their soybean crop, which is, you know, a record crop this year, at all. It's harvest time and their biggest customer is not available. So, you know, this has been a huge problem for farmers. It has caused farmers across the country in sort of the main national survey of farmer outlook to say that they are pessimistic about their economic prospects right now. And that's, you know, that's brutal. And then on top of that, we have this immigration crackdown. So farmers are hanging on for this subsidy that's supposed to make up for the impact of tariffs. That's what Trump has promised them. But, you know, as a former USDA official I interviewed about this said, it's not even robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's robbing Peter to pay Peter to create a subsidy out of what Trump says is the revenue coming in from tariffs. Well, that revenue is what farmers are paying in high prices for farm equipment and fertilizer. Trump is promising to turn around and give them a bailout using their own money. You know, what farmers want is markets that work for them to be able to sell their products and make a living. And that is not on the horizon right now. You know, there's a vague promise that somehow tariffs are going to improve that situation, are going to counteract the long-term effects of, you know, global economic, you know, selling your product at a low price on a global marketplace is hard. And that is a problem that needs to be addressed, but it's not at all clear how this chaotic economic situation that we're in now with trade wars and tariffs is advancing the ball on that. So that's where they are currently with the shutdown. And then on top of that, the threat of mass deportation is a big, big deal for Wisconsin, because our dairy industry depends on the labor of immigrants who are not allowed to get a visa through our current system, because year-round farm work does not qualify for a visa. The H-2A visa, which is a farm work visa that most farm workers who can get a visa use, is seasonal only. So if you have a year-round industry, it is automatically disqualified from that visa. So here we have an industry in the dairy industry that for decades has depended, 60 to 90% of the labor is immigrant labor. They can't qualify for a visa because Congress has never fixed that system and created a year-round visa. And so now we're threatening to deport all these guys. But what's going to happen to our dairy industry if we lose 60 to 90% of our labor? It can't survive that. So no, that's a major crisis.
It can't sustain that. And there are people that could be working on these things, like Congressman Derek Van Orden, who's got a very dairy heavy congressional district, or Congressman Tom Tiffany, who's been in office in Congress and the legislature long enough. And instead, switching gears to a different story that you're following, Tom Tiffany, who's now running for governor, was there on the steps of the Capitol late last week talking about his outrage over a Cap Times investigation tracking more than 200 cases of alleged child sexual abuse by Wisconsin teachers and the way that these cases were handled by the State Department of Public Instruction. But again, this is me editorializing for a moment. This is Rich coming from a guy who, you know, has not exactly been calling for the release of the Epstein files. So you do a wonderful job of putting this into perspective, of saying, look, these are serious allegations. There's some serious cases here, but let's not be fooled by the outright politicization of this matter from certain politicians as well.
Yeah, I'm really dismayed by what has happened with that story. The Cap Times spent a year doing an investigation in which they found these 200 cases. And in many cases, the Department of Public Instruction in Wisconsin allowed teachers to give up their licenses voluntarily and then dropped these investigations against them. The suggestion in the Cap Times story is that this amounts to a cover-up, or, you know, hiding, shielding is the word they used, these cases. It's a little more complicated than that. Jill Underley, the state superintendent, argues that teachers who give up their teaching license are now in a national database, and they're taken away from children. And furthermore, it's not DPI's job to continue to investigate people who are no longer in the profession. So, I mean, I think there's something to be said for that. The problem is Jill Underley went to get an award from her alma mater in Indiana instead of showing up for the legislative hearing on this issue, prompted by that Cap Times investigation, which really gives the impression that she doesn't care very much about something that is becoming a major scandal. And is frankly, you mentioned Tom Tiffany and his press conference at the Capitol, it's going to be a big campaign issue. And it feeds into this political environment in which for many, many years, Republicans and the incredibly powerful school choice lobby in Wisconsin have been pushing the message that public schools have failed, that we should take the money that we spend on public education, pull it out of the public schools, and hand it over to private school operators. And that is increasingly a huge problem for the finances of public education in our state. So that's kind of the political backdrop. You know, basically, this is a gift to the Tom Tiffany campaign and to Republicans who are running in 2026 to say, look at these terrible teachers. You know, they're sexual predators and the Department of Public Instruction is hiding this from you. And it's actually not quite that, but it's really important to push back because, you know, for one thing, the private schools that Republicans want to channel money into have zero oversight.
They're less accountable.
The teachers don't even need to have a license. So the teachers in private schools could be doing anything. We don't know. And the concerns raised in that Cap Times investigation, lack of transparency, lack of accountability, lack of a record that shows the public what's going on with these investigations, that's going to be much worse in the private schools. We're just not going to see what's happening there. And we don't hold these teachers accountable. So that's, you know, it's a narrative. It's an unfortunate narrative that contributes to the destruction of our once great public school system in Wisconsin. But Underley is really, she really shares some blame for this. She needs to show up.
She, if I recall right, she turned down request interviews by the Cap Times prior to this coming out, which she, to me was...
She herself claimed it would be a conflict of interest for her to talk to the Cap Times, which is silly. Mm-hmm. And she's her, I mean, I feel sorry for the her deputies at DPI who showed up very well prepared at this legislative hearing. But the news out of that hearing was that Underly herself was too busy, you know, getting an award from her alma mater to come in person.
Right. So, and look, I'm leaving room for, because I don't put it past the Republican members to, you know, to understand that Underly already had a previously scheduled trip and may have monkeyed around with the schedule. To me, the original sin was Jill Underly not sitting down with a reporter or making every deputy, you know, imaginable available to do this. And like you said, it's opened up the door for all kinds of, you know, politics to be played with something, which is exactly why your headline says that the children have become a campaign issue in the worst possible way. You can read this full column and much more at the Wisconsin Examiner. Head over to WisconsinExaminer.com. Ruth Conniff, editor-in-chief, thank you very much for some much-needed background on this. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Pat. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Ruth. We will have some final news and notes from Lake Wissota coming up after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, let's start to wrap things up here. First, by acknowledging that I may have to change my coffee intake because these single cups that I had after breaking the coffee pot earlier this morning. Once you get the measurements figured out, this is pretty good.
Yeah,
I might have to. Right now, I have a hot plate right in front of me here to keep the, you know, because I'll pour it out of the coffee pot and it'll get cold otherwise. I might just have to put a single serving coffee maker right here in front of me. And it'll just be like I'm a lab rat with a pellet dispenser, and I just keep hitting it for another shot of caffeine. Because this coffee is pretty good from the single size. Boy. I'm totally understanding the cup. The cups are bad, okay? The little Keurig cups, they fill up the landfills. Get the reusable ones. Put in the right amount of coffee, the right amount of water, and I could stay caffeinated. I could do this all the way through the rest of the day here. Give Todd Alba the day off, you know? I'll just keep going.
Really? You think you can do 5 hours on air?
With this much coffee? Yeah, probably. Anyway.
Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show. I'm Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, the host.
I've got in front of me something I picked up at the medical supply store yesterday. Yes, I was at the medical supply store because I'm old now and needed supplies for my CPAP machine, which is, you know, it has totally addressed the sleep apnea. It's been wonderful. But when you have to go to the same place where you would get your, your commodes, and some of the other things that you need. You see things like this newsletter from the Aging and Disability Resource Center, the ADRC of Eau Claire County. And there's a big article in the front about Medicare Part D open enrollment. Yeah. You know, we just talked about open enrollment for plans under the Affordable Care Act. That begins this Saturday. But we are already in the open enrollment period for Medicare Part D or Medicare Advantage. And it's not something that I need yet. But I have been asked by a certain person who birthed me many years ago to assist her in finding a new Medicare Advantage plan. And I have learned so much about it that I wanted to share it. And that is why we have a guest coming in on Thursday to tell us more. And that her name is Ingrid Cunninger. And she is from the, let me get the title right here, the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources. Again, the Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources is going to talk to us all about Medicare Part D, whether it's for you or if you are the adult child or caregiver of somebody, and finding the plan that works out best for you. So again, that is Thursday morning. Can I give you the bare bones outline of the show that I need to do after this? Maybe it's my retirement project.
There's a show after this.
As a whatever my next thing is going to be.
Oh, you don't mean like in the next hour. Like, you mean
no,
like,
no. Jane and Greg are safe. They're good. Okay. But this is something I talked about with Mark Jacob a lot in the early days when he was doing our segment on Fridays. Was we need something that just refutes the talking points that we are fed by the right-wing media system all day long. And it started with a lot of what we're hearing now with the government shutdown is why I want to bring this up again. But it started with Mark Jacob, and we were always talking about how Meet the Press especially, but cable news channels in general, would have these politicians on live, ask them questions. They wouldn't answer the questions. They'd, you know, run out the clock, and pretty soon the host is like, well, that's all the time we have. Thank you, and never really challenge them. And I said, we need to stop doing this. We need to stop putting politicians on live that you know are going to lie to you or not answer the question, and instead let other people do it. And then instead of having live guests on Sunday mornings, is you play clips of these politicians on other shows, and then you break it down and say, here's where they're lying, or here's where they're mistaken, or here's where they're being misleading, and just do something like that. And it has occurred to me, especially looking at the comment section, oh, I don't know, today, as we've talked about SNAP benefits, as we've talked about the Affordable Care Act, that there is ample room for a show that simply takes on talking points. I know what other people have proposed. They've said what Democrats need to do is they need to have a daily thing. They need to have, like, Pete Buttigieg needs to go out and do a daily briefing every day that refutes what Republicans are doing and pushes progressive talking points, and people would watch that. Yes, perhaps. And perhaps Democrats do need to be more aggressive in their messaging, but it also runs the risk of just creating another media bubble. There are people in their right-wing media bubble. There would be a lot of, you know, progressives in that media bubble, and what would you really get out of it? I think there's room somewhere in the middle. If only this is where, again, I'm sad that Tim Russert is no longer with us, but somebody of his caliber who would not have live guests on and would simply play these clips and say, okay, here's the real deal on this. And then you take it a step further and you say, now, to be fair, here's what that politician would say in return. So the politician says something, we spell out what the facts are. That politician's going to have something else to say. So you'd say, to be fair, here's what that person would say, and here's the comeback to that. And I just feel like if you did that just simply with tape clips and with fact-based information, you could have something that is, it's not ha-ha like The Daily Show, where they play back clips and you know, tell you some fact-based stuff, but then they play it for laughs. But this is much more informative. So I would call the show To Be Fair. And we would just do a call and response show kind of like that. And now I've given it all away, and somebody else is going to do it and make a lot of money off it.
I like this a lot. I'm pretty sure that you just kind of explained the plot of Newsroom in season one. Just a thought.
Yeah, yeah. You know, just a couple of years later that you do that. All right. No, thanks for bursting my bubble there, Parker. Appreciate it.
It's a great idea. I like it. You should do it, Pat.
I appreciate how delusional you get when you're under the weather like this. So get a nap, feel better soon, and we'll do this all again tomorrow. Or if I open up this camera and I don't see you on the other side, you know, then we'll know.
Yeah,
and
good luck.
We'll hope Luke Mathers can drive really fast to get here. So, all right, feel better, man. I'll talk to you in the morning. We'll see all of you tomorrow morning as well. Bright and early here up north, 6 a.m. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. Follow what we do at upnorthnewswi.com. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great day.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.